Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Really excited today. I'm always excited for my shows, but I'm excited because we're going to talk about fear foods today with a wonderful coach who she's a legitimate coach. And I know there's some confusion out there sometimes about like, is the coach that I'm looking at online, and they're legit? Are they not? Like, what is a coach? I know there's all sorts of questions people have sometimes about that. So the guest and I are going to talk about how you can figure out if a coach is legitimate or not, if there's someone you can work with. Also, the difference between a coach versus a psychologist, and who to pick for treatment and what the differences are, because I know there's some questions I get all the time. So I did, you know, think about some of the questions I do get in the DM. So thank you for all the listeners who do send those. But I did get some questions about fear foods as well. I do get a lot of questions about like, why do I have to eat this food? Or am I ever going to be able to eat this food? Or I'm so scared to try this food in treatment. I don't know how to get over this hurdle. So like I said, that's why I'm really excited to have our guest here today. And I think there's a lot of information that we're going to talk about that's not just about fear foods. It's a lot just about eating disorders, the behaviors. How do you know if you have an eating disorder versus like not? Because I think there's a lot of eating disorder behaviors that people engage in that they don't realize are eating disordered. Our toxic diet culture really makes it confusing for people. And people think that the behaviors they're engaging in are just, you know, what quote unquote everyone else does. And it's normal, and they're not. And not knowing what you're doing is and can be actually detrimental to your health. And, you know, if your eating disorder goes on too long and you don't even know you have one, you know, there can be some really horrible consequences for your physical health, emotional health, for just in general. So I always advocate getting into treatment sooner rather than later. But again, if you don't know that you are sick, you're not going to get into treatment. So I always appreciate when I have guests on here who are willing to discuss what eating disorder behaviors are, so that anyone listening today, maybe you'll hear some things and go, oh my gosh, like I do those things. I can relate to that. And that might be your first step toward awareness and then hopefully toward getting help. But that being said, I want to introduce our guest, Meg McCabe. She's fully recovered from her own eating disorder, and she is a certified Carolyn Costin Institute eating disorder recovery coach and founder of the Global Online Eating Disorder Recovery Community, which she calls the Recovery Collective. Meg is also the host of the Full and Thriving podcast, and she has a private one-to-one coaching practice and is a speaker, group facilitator, and writer on the topics of mental health, recovery, community, and personal empowerment. All right. Well, Meg, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here.
Hello, Christina. Thank you so much for having me. It is an honor. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Well, I know we're in for a great show today, great topic, but I would love to hear more about you, your journey, and I'm sure the audience would too. So would you mind sharing a little bit about like how you got to this place in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So my journey goes back to high school when I developed an eating disorder. I went to high school in the early mid 2000s. So that was when thin was in and there was no body positivity really happening out there. So I felt the pressure and I ended up getting or having an eating disorder, which was anorexia with a little bit of bulimia in there for a few years, right? So it was kind of the binge purge type of anorexia. And a lot of that stemmed from the pressure to actually be a fashion model. I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I felt like the world was looking at me like, you have two options. You could either be a basketball player or a model. Which one do you want to be? And so I was like, I'll take the glamorous route. Mm-hmm. And I really attached my value as a person to my appearance and my size. And I really felt like in order to be valued, to be special, to be important, to be memorable, I had to be the thinnest person in the room and the most fashionable. So it was really a situation where the eating disorder was like the perfect tool for me to get there. Mm-hmm. Right. But of course that whole lifestyle, the fashion modeling in New York City, I did do the runway stuff. I did do the magazine stuff. It was not sustainable because my relationship with food was so tumultuous. Mm-hmm. I was not able to sustain that very long, right? And then the eating disorder was so intense that I ended up having to quit, leave that environment, focus on recovery, you know, throughout before college and right into college. I took some time off to really dive in there, get better. Mm-hmm. And I just returned back to having, you know, the traditional trajectory of going to college and moving on with a career. And in my mid-20s, I discovered life coaching. Mm. But it's funny because every time I would host a life coaching event or I would try to help people in or do a speaking gig or something, I would lean on my eating disorder story for inspiration and wisdom. And I found that that part of the story really resonated with people. And so many people would come up to me and say, I have an eating disorder. I want to learn more about that. I need your help with that. Some, you know, it was like the first time anyone, like they had heard of people talking about it openly, it felt like. So then I realized and discovered that there was an eating disorder recovery coaching program through the Carolyn Costin Institute. And I immediately signed up and became a certified eating disorder recovery coach. And now I support people in that way. I don't know if your listeners know too much about eating disorder recovery coaching, but I help a lot with behavior change, goal setting, mindset. And then, you know, besides that, beyond the practice that I have, I also am the founder of the Recovery Collective, which is an online eating disorder recovery community. And I have my own podcast as well. So it's just been a really nice development and trajectory into the space.
That's great. And I think a lot of people, like myself included, I think a lot of us who've had that experience, now we're, you know, we're recovered and helping people, because I think you're right. You have that experience of opening up and sharing, and people just also opening up and sharing because they're like, oh my gosh, like finally someone who's, you know, I can relate to. And I think mm-hmm. it is that experience. And that's one of the reasons why I have the podcast and why I have guests like you on, because hopefully listeners out there going, okay, there's other people out here who've, you know, gone through this, maybe listening to your story, they're saying, oh, I can relate to the things you're saying. And also just, you know, I always say this on my podcast, but to instill the hope that yes, you can fully recover. And yes, there is mm-hmm. help out there. And there's lots of avenues to help, because I think a lot of times people say, gosh, where do I go? I can't afford therapy. I can't find a therapist around me. And I know that's a big hurdle too. Like I'm in the Bay Area in California, and you know, I can't help anybody out of the state of California, right? So yeah, that's hard. And so for you being a coach, like, how has that been for you? I'm just curious, you know, how do people find you in terms of like working with them? You know, what's that been like for you?
Yeah. So coaching is an interesting field. It's kind of the Wild West, right? You can find recovery coaches who are legitimately certified. They've had supervision hours. They have continuing education, like to maintain their certifications. And then there are also coaches out there who just kind of stick up the sign in their front yard and they're like, I'm a coach, and they're not like really trained.
Yeah.
So it is really an interesting time to be a coach. Sometimes I don't even like being calling myself a coach or associating with that term, because there are so many woo-woo people out there using the term and not helping people in a safe way. So that's definitely been a challenge. But for me, I've been really focused on networking and working alongside the therapists, the dietitians, the doctors, and building my practice that way. And also creating content that is professional and informed, like well-researched, and because, you know, I could easily be a coach who's not posting responsibly online. And some people who have eating disorders don't have the media literacy or even are exposed to professionals enough to know who is a coach that is well-trained versus who's just an influencer. So
yes,
an interesting place to be.
You know, and I've had people on here and we've talked about that some, and I'm very curious about, you know, your thoughts on that. And maybe somebody listening who hasn't heard one of my past podcasts where I've talked about that, how does somebody know, like, okay, you know, Meg's a coach that is certified, she's educated, she's not a quote unquote influencer. Like, how does somebody differentiate? Because especially if they're saying, look, I can't afford therapy, I can't find a psychologist, maybe they don't even need, maybe they don't know, do I need like a doctor to help me? Do I need treatment? Do I need inpatient? Maybe I just want to start with a coach. Like, how do they even know like you're legit versus someone else is like an influencer and like spewing toxic diet culture?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And I will first say a really well-trained recovery coach is not going to allow you to hire them if you do not already have a therapist and or a dietitian on board. So I do not work with anyone who does not already have some sort of a semblance of a team. And so that's first, I think that's the first red flag. Like if they're just letting you work with them because they found you online and like you think you can do all the, you can, I think there are coaches who step out of their lanes. And so a really good coach is going to know that while we can hold space for someone, we're not going to be helping them process trauma. Right? We're not going to be doing trauma work. It's going to be focused on bringing it back to the food, the eating disorder, the behavior change, and staying in our lane and consulting with the team as often as necessary. Yeah, so that's a big one. And then I guess also, as far as influencers go, I also think there's some professionalism online where like, you know, there's a professional there because a professional is not really centering their body around their content.
Yeah.
So if you want to hire a recovery coach who's flaunting a bikini around all day, like that's also a very bright red flag, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. You keep on bikini pics out there? What's going on?
You know, that was just, that would never like be a source of joy for me to begin with. But, you know, at this, yeah. I just don't think like if you are well-trained, you know that there are certain boundaries, you know, on your professional Instagram, at least, where you don't want to be centering your body because, you know, that could be really triggering.
Yeah.
For some people. So.
Well, especially working with eating disorders. Yes, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But so speaking of which, like focusing on the food, and I know we're going to talk today about like fear foods. And I know how I work with people when they're talking about fear foods, more getting into like what more of the psychological reasons for that. Right. But so if someone comes to you and they talk about how they're in treatment and they're really struggling with like eating certain foods or they're scared of certain foods or their feelings about certain foods, like how do you work with somebody who comes to you? Maybe we should even talk about like, what is a fear food? Just start with.
Yeah. So I think fear foods, they really stem from those arbitrary rules that your eating disorder loves to just enforce and choose as important, right? So a lot of time your fear foods come from the eating disorder making BS rules about, oh, guess what? You're not allowed to eat processed sugar, or you're not allowed to eat carbohydrates, etc. And so the fear foods stem from these rules. And they're usually just rules that you've picked up that's come from diet culture. They originate, you don't know how many people I've spoken to who said, oh, I heard Dr. Phil say this one time and I never had fruit again, you know, and you're like, what? Mm-hmm. So that's where the fears seem to originate from.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as working with people, you know, I first want to say there is a place when you are ready to challenge fear foods. And I think that's one area where we want to just be more cautious and conscientious. So if you're not eating regular meals a day and snacks, so you're not reaching that regularity and adequacy, as in the quantity you're eating a day,
mm-hmm.
you might not be ready to challenge that huge like pint of Ben and Jerry's or whatever. Like it doesn't make sense for someone to be necessarily challenging themselves in that way when they haven't started eating regularly and adequately. So I want everyone listening to check in with themselves and like, are you focused on fear foods before you're ready? But once you are, so once you're eating regularly and adequately, it's actually really fun to start challenging that variety a little bit and adding some fear foods in. And that's really when things start to come alive and get exciting again. But I'll stop there because I could go on and on.
No, but that's great. And so it's interesting. So this week I've been focusing with a couple of the patients I'm working with on just that. You said like eating frequently enough and adequately enough. And the big question is, how do I know I'm actually eating enough? Because I remember, I don't know if you went through this, but I remember thinking, I'm eating plenty. I'm eating actually so much. And then when I was given a meal plan, I was like, oh my, what? That's like, even one meal seemed like enormous to me.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I couldn't fathom like what, it was mind blowing to me, like how much adequate really is.
Right. And
so like maybe someone listening going, I eat enough, or if I just add a few things, I'll be fine. Or I eat frequently enough. And so I get that question so often. So even someone listening going, what is adequate? What is frequently enough?
Well, that's such a good question. And again, as a coach, I just want to say that is definitely better to ask. It's better to ask a dietitian mm-hmm. or your dietitian what's enough for you. So I always lean on the individual's dietitian to answer that question. But I know from my experience, I started eating and I felt like I was eating enough when I stopped over-focusing on food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you feel that you're not restricting anymore. You're not over-focused on food. You're not preoccupied with it. You're not as rigid anymore. You find yourself eating like a little bit more freely throughout the day. And I think there are it's just those small little signs that you've let go of that rigidity and that hunger, that like chronic hunger that seems to be there, that's making you focus so much on food.
I think that's the freedom, right? Mm-hmm. People ask, what is it like to not have like a head in your head or the eating disorder? And I think that's the big one. It's like, you don't think about it anymore.
Right. Yeah. Like you don't think about it. And that's why it's actually a really natural progression. Like I feel like if you're eating regularly enough and adequately enough, you'll naturally start to feel ready to challenge that variety, mm-hmm. Which is great. You know, that's really fun. I've had clients who come to me and it's this very rigid process of small baby step goals. And then suddenly they come to me one session and they go, you know what? There was a cookie at work and I just had it. And I would have never done that a few months ago. And I didn't set that challenge for them, but that individual was ready for that spontaneity to begin with, or they were ready, brave enough to start incorporating variety on their own.
What do you think it is? Like, what do you find people are most often when we're talking about fear? What are they fearing? What are you working with them in terms of like this cookie, for instance? What's so scary to people about this cookie, right?
Yeah. So again, it all comes back to what that person's rules are. So there's a part of them, their eating disorder, that stopped giving them permission to have something related to this cookie. So that could be part of it. Like, what is the cookie made out of? Is there, quote, too much sugar, quote, too much refined flour, whatever they're afraid of? Every eating disorder has the most arbitrary set of rules. Maybe it's, oh, they can't have more than X amount of cookies a day or X amount of sweets a day. So the rules can even go to, oh, I'm not allowed to have this cookie at this certain time of day. So there, the fears come from that. And then I also hear the fear of, what if I eat the cookie and then I can't stop? That's a really common one too. What if I eat this and I lose control? And so there could be many different fears coming into play when it comes to these fear foods. And so as a coach, we really want to unpack, like, what is the fear? Mm-hmm. And then again, start to set challenges and goals that are planned and actually, like, clear, planned and clear, so that you start incorporating that, say, cookie. Maybe it's like once that week. And then maybe it's the next week you do once or twice. The key is repetition. So you want to keep exposing yourself to facing this fear. You know, I think oftentimes people face the fear once and they give themselves a nice pat on the back and they're like, I did that. But if you don't keep incorporating the fear food into your life, then the fear will still be strong. It will still have like a chokehold over you. So the repetition is key. And then also thinking about, okay, there are many versions of cookies. So maybe you want to start with a little bit safer of a cookie, like organic, whatever, like Whole Foods type, I don't know, like some safer version of a cookie, bakery, whatever. And then as you get more brave, expose yourself to Oreos and the things that everyone demonize, right? Because there's so many times that our eating disorder will moralize foods and types of food, you know? And so it's not just, oh, I had one cookie one time. It's, I had cookies many times and many types of cookies.
Right. No, but it's true, because I think that's the nuance of it, right? That's why people say, oh, what's the treatment for an eating disorder? And it's so individual, right? Because sometimes, to your point, someone says, oh my gosh, if I eat one, I'm bad, because I deem that as a bad food, right? Or I feel guilty, and they beat themselves up. And then they're negotiating with Ed, right? And I got to go compensate somehow, or I'm not allowed to eat something later, or I'm so scared I'm going to, you know, gain weight, and their body checking for like the next 2 days or whatever. They're convinced they gained weight immediately or whatever it is. Right. Everybody's so different.
Yeah. And that's why it's an interesting role you and I both play. We both are kind of diving in there and getting clear on exactly what are the fears. How does that manifest into the food that you're having? Yeah, I think with the fear foods, another thing you mentioned that I think is important to bring up when it comes to challenging fear foods is also getting one step ahead of your eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, we've all been guilty. If you had an eating disorder, you know what this is. You probably know what I'm already going to say. You challenge the fear food, but then you compensate for it after. And in my opinion, it's basically the same as not doing it, to be honest, because you're corrupting the integrity of the challenge and the commitment you made to doing this. So this is when I recommend working with a team or your coach to get one step ahead and be like, okay, my pattern is, if I challenge this fear food, I know I'm going to be really tempted to compensate through, say, you know, I'll just throw one out there, walking, mm-hmm. right? Or I'm going to have to go to the gym more, or XYZ, insert behavior there. And when you call it out, you're kind of letting go of a little bit of that control. You are decreasing the power just a little bit. And the hope is you can build some accountability in there. So, okay, I'm going to challenge this. And I'm also going to commit to not using this behavior. And instead of turning to this behavior when I feel uncomfortable, I'm going to turn to one of these coping skills or distractions that me and my team have put in place mm-hmm. and practice that whole experience of sitting with the discomfort of not using the behavior and turning to something other than your eating disorder to get through it. And always know that it is a temporary urge and that you can sit through it. And it's a matter of exploring how you can get through that urge with a coach or your team at your side.
Yeah. And I love that you said that too, because I think that's the truth, is like having that awareness and like, okay, finding yourself like, okay, I'm going to go toward the walk, and then going, wait a minute, I just said I wasn't going to do that. This is what I do. Hold on, stop. Like,
yes. Yes. If you really, really want to recover, you need to be radically honest with yourself about where the eating disorder is going to come in and corrupt the challenge or the situation. And we've, like I said, this, everyone here listening probably can relate to that. Like I really tried, I did this thing, but then I found myself compensating for it later. You have mm-hmm. to call yourself out on that when you plan ahead. Like planning these challenges is super important because you can be honest with yourself and with your team. Mm-hmm. And so in the moment, you know, all right, I already told everyone, you know, the cat's out of the bag. This is part of the plan. Part of the plan is coping. And then I will also say, I do like to, if you want, add some sort of self-care at the end. So once you get through it, maybe do something kind for yourself, just to reinforce, like, you know, you accomplished this thing.
I like that a lot because, and I think this gets confusing too, right? Like, I don't know your experience. I mean, I grew up without the internet, but I remember reading like Shape magazine, and it kind of set up this mentality. I call it like the bulimia mentality. It said like, mm-hmm. if you eat a Snickers, you have to run for like X number of minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you eat an apple, it's only this many, right? Or like, and it set this thing in my, I remember reading this when I was like 10, like, right?
Yeah.
And for me, that just seemed normal. I didn't realize like I was compensating by exercising. I thought this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Right. I just thought actually like purging was just in making myself throw up. I did not realize like exercising after I ate or having that mentality of like, oh, the magazine said if I eat this, I got to go burn it off. I didn't realize that you don't have to burn it off. Like your body uses food that you eat and needs it. But also that the message out there right now is like exercise more and eat less, right? And so I think it might be confusing for people. Like, well, of course, if I eat the cookie, I got to go move more. Like that's what's out there, right? And so I think there is a lot of education that you're doing that's wonderful. Is just even right now saying this, I wonder if people are going, wait a minute, what? I do that? Like maybe they're not aware that's eating disordered behavior.
Yeah, that's why education is so important. I think there are therapists, dietitians, coaches out there who forget to inform our clients about the basics. Mm-hmm. I have seen so many little eyes light up, like minds been blown when I explain that calories aren't just there for us when we're active, right? Like a calorie is used when you're resting. You burn calories just by thinking and breathing. The majority of your calories are going to making sure your heart and your brain are functioning okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you're eating very little, that's why the rest of your body's systems start to shut down. Because mm-hmm. all of the limited energy you're giving your body is going to the vital organs. When in reality, you need enough energy, which is what a calorie is, you need enough energy for the entire body to be functioning. And then you need energy to fuel your workouts. So if you're working out on an empty stomach or any, like, whatever that might look like, you are just depleting your body of nutrients it's supposed to have for more, like, really important things.
Yeah. Like thinking, like you said, or like your heart to pump and lungs to breathe and all sorts of things, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's right on. Like, where's the lack of education too?
I don't know. I think that's a really good question. I find, you know, as academic people, intellectual people, a lot of times us as providers, we just don't want to be explaining the rudimentary stuff. Right? Mm. We know it like the back of our hand, but then I always find the stripping it back to basic education for our clients is so important, right? And repeating the basic stuff and the basic messages over and over and over again can have an impact because adults learn through repetition. So yes, maybe your therapist went through a list of coping skills with you one time. Mm-hmm. And then the therapist said, you know, we covered that. Let's move on. But it is important to revisit those things. So mm-hmm. I think we're sometimes we try to be impressive and keep it really in depth and complex when really we can continue hammering home messages that need to be heard multiple times. It's like when you're listening to an inspirational podcast and that person says the same inspirational message multiple times for like 30 minutes. And you're like, oh, okay. That one time they said it, it finally clicked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think that's true, especially if somebody's not eating enough and their brain might not be fueled enough. Just something clicks sometimes like, oh, wait, food is actually just fuel and nutrition for my body at the basic level. Like sometimes mm-hmm. like it's hard to take that in. And then all of a sudden it just, wait a minute. Like this is the only thing keeping me alive here. Wait a minute. Yeah. I actually need to eat. Hold on.
Right. The messenger is, I guess nobody wants to be repetitive, but again, we have to remember that, you know, sometimes our brains aren't listening mm-hmm. or they're undernourished. They're distracted. Maybe their eating disorder is yelling at them during the entire session. You mm-hmm. think they're paying attention and they're only half paying attention. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's, I think that's where the gap could be.
Yeah, no, that's, I love that you said that too. Cause like, I'm imagining people's eating disorder voice yeah. is just like, she's full of it. Like she just wants me to like, whatever, or like, oh no, I'm just going to go home and do what I want to do. Or just, I mean, all sorts of things, right?
Yeah. You just have to sometimes say the basic stuff. And then it will finally connect. I mean, I've had really intelligent clients, really highly educated, highly well-achieved clients. And like the other day I was talking about body checking and to this client who's like a psychologist, right? And I was like, you know, you just have to not put your hand up and pinch your stomach. Just make sure, keep your hands down by your side. And it's impossible to do that. Mm. And it was the most basic thing. And it was like a aha moment for this individual. And I almost felt weird saying it because it was so obvious, but she needed to hear it in that moment.
Did she recognize that that was actually body checking? Did she know that's what it was until you like named it for her, labeled it?
Yes, because we've been working together for a while. So I'll okay. go through what body checking looks like.
Okay.
You know, in detail with my clients, the types of body checking and what it even is. So she was aware that when she walks into the bathroom and does this thing, that's body checking. Okay. So breaking down those small behaviors into detail, like, okay, what about the environment triggers you to do this thing? What mm-hmm. thoughts are you experiencing? How do you do it? How can we get in there and kind of intercept the moment and get mm-hmm. you to break that routine? Because it's probably automated.
Yeah.
So the more that you're talking about this thing, yeah, I could say, oh, she goes and body checks. And I'm like, okay, that's what she does. But the more you talk about it, the more you bring it into the forefront of your mind, all of these details, the more likely your client's going to be there tempted to use a behavior and say, hey, we talked about this. Mm-hmm. We broke this down. I know what's about to happen. And I'm going to do something. I have a choice. And mm-hmm. I'm going to choose to not fall back into the same pattern again.
Right. Bringing that awareness.
Yeah.
But I wonder like how many people are doing things and they don't really know that it is body checking behavior because they don't have they just like this automatic thing they've been doing for years and don't realize that it's mm-hmm. part of the eating disorder, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a really good question. And it has to do, I think, like you were saying before, with the mixed messages we've all received about dieting. Like you even said, like you remember looking at that magazine and it was telling you like you had to move in order to eat this thing, or this is what you had to burn off in order to eat this thing. Mm-hmm. Like the preoccupation with appearance, like people are going to be body checking because they're focused on what the magazine tells them. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to know what it is. And I think, like, I didn't know what body checking was when I had my eating disorder. I didn't know what set point theory was. I didn't have the language. So I always feel really grateful when people make their way to getting legitimate treatment. Mm-hmm. Because that means they learned enough to know that there is an issue. And they found someone who can actually help.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you're talking about this, Steph, because I mean, I don't know your experience, but I just thought I'm just awful at dieting. I'm a failure. Like I'm not doing this right. And I didn't realize, to your point, all these things I was doing were so eating disordered, right? Oh my gosh. That's why I'm glad you have your podcast. That's why I'm glad you're on here. And I have this. It's like the hope is enough people are making a shift and a change and saying the things instead of the influencers, because the toxic diet messages are one thing, but really getting the messages out there about like, hey, these are eating disorder behaviors. These are toxic things that can hurt you mm-hmm. versus like what's so much out there, I think, is promoted to like do things that are actually harmful, that are eating disordered in a way and can mm-hmm. perpetuate, you know, dieting, which is a precursor to eating disorders in many instances. And for people just to know, like when they've crossed the line, or to know, hey, I actually need help. Like yeah. I'm not just dieting anymore. I've actually like crossed over into like, I need treatment. I need a coach. I need help. I need mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. something more.
Yeah. Dieting normalizes eating disorders, unfortunately. And without the education, you're not going, you might not necessarily know. You can go half your life before maybe you go to your first therapy session and someone says, hey, maybe you have an eating disorder. And it's so sad. And I honestly don't know if I would have known I had an eating disorder until I started purging. Mm. Because for me, that was the red flag that made me wake up and be like, oh, I actually have an eating disorder. Something's gone wrong, because mm-hmm. I know this is not okay. But for those who are struggling with like anorexia, I bet you it's so blurry because they're just doing what the magazines say and they're or the influencers say. Magazines are kind of outdated now, but it's yes. like they're doing what they're told, and they're usually their temperament is to do the thing that they're told the best.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you're the perfectionistic type of person or the high achieving person. They've just consumed all of this information about, hey, what's going to make me healthy, right? How can I be healthy? And then it just becomes a little bit contrived and they take it to the extreme and they're still thinking this is in the name of health, but it's crossed the line. You know, maybe when a person's like starting to get like medical complications is another place where the eyes are opened a little bit and recognizing, hey, this might not just be a diet. It's now an eating disorder.
And that's what scares me, is that sometimes they don't get any. And
Yeah.
You know, it's a very quick, like, slope. Like, once people for years can be quote unquote fine, not feel any medical complications or experience any, but once they do, it can be very rapid and very quick. And that's the scary part for me. And I do want to put that out there. Like, if people have a false sense of like, I'm okay, until you're not okay.
Right. Yeah. So true. Sometimes you can have a glaring, awful, raging eating disorder and all of your blood work comes back normal. Mm-hmm. Right? And so again, I think it comes down to some self-honesty and self-awareness of like really checking in with yourself and your emotions, right? And being like, am I okay? Like, how am I feeling? And I think it's important to always check in because, yes, you might be doing all of these behaviors in the name of health, right? You might be dieting for health, but how is your quality of life, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, I hope people, and it's so hard because you want to turn a blind eye to all these things that are, you know, how this diet or eating disorder is hurting you. But again, really being honest, like, my quality of life is not good. These are the, you know, symptoms I'm experiencing. These are the, you know, it's time to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I think too, just kind of going back to the fear foods, if people are really fearing a lot of foods and they have this huge list, or they're like really restricting the foods that they're allowing themselves, I've said that in quotes. Mm-hmm. That's a clue too, right? If you're really scared of foods, telling yourself you don't trust yourself around them, just that one thing right there, just kind of check in for anyone listening, like that might be a big clue.
Mm-hmm. Are you on an emotional roller coaster when it comes to food?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how emotional is your experience with food?
Yeah.
And for me, food was the thing that told me I was having a good day. It told me I was having a bad day. It told me how to feel. Mm-hmm. And I had so much like negativity and connected to it, like guilt, shame, anger. Like, mm-hmm. I was experiencing all these horrible emotions to something as neutral as food.
Yeah.
So if you don't think you have an eating disorder, but you're experiencing these wild emotions connected to food, that is a sign that something's not quite right, because a recovered person or a person with a healthy relationship with food is going to see that food as neutral. They're not going to be beating themselves up. It's going to be something that helps them get through their day. They feel maybe good about, maybe okay about, but it's not going to be this painful experience or this confusing experience. Mm-hmm. I find confusion is another sign that maybe there's something you need to check in on. Because if you're standing at the grocery store, staring at the aisle, confused about which type of cereal to get, you know, that's another sign that your relationship with food is just a little, you know, it's a little too, there's something going on there.
No, that's a great clue. I mean, it's interesting. I always say this too, like, we have the diagnostic criteria for like actually diagnosing somebody, but then there's like the things you're talking about, right? Or that we're talking about that are like the lived experience, and that's missing in the clinical diagnoses, right? Like the nuanced things like this. And so that's another reason why I'm so glad we're talking about these things, because like anyone can look and Google up like what are the symptoms or what are the clinical diagnostic criteria for these eating disorders. But that doesn't tell you how it really is to live with one and what it really looks like on the day to day or experience having one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your lived experience matters. The qualitative like data on your life matters, right? Like, it's not just about what eating disorders are defined as. It's about your lived experience and the distress you have around food. We're talking about fear foods here. Fear connected to food should not really be there unless you have a life-threatening allergy or like, right? Then I understand.
Right.
Then I understand. But it like, fear and food doesn't have to be in the same sentence. really, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Meg, you have been a fantastic, wonderful. All this is great information. And I know people listening are probably like shaking their heads, like relating to lots of things. Do you have any last final things to say to anybody who's listening today?
You know, it's a really good question. Final words of advice, words of wisdom. I guess, first of all, be a few things. I think trying to be more patient with yourself is important in recovery. It's going to take as long as it's going to take. Don't be shooting yourself like you should be farther along the road than you already are. You have a lot of emotions to work through, experiences to work through. Like, you're facing your fears every single day. And that is a hard experience. So I just want you to have compassion for your where you're at and patience. Because this process looks totally different for everybody. And so I guess that's my final word of wisdom for you is let it take what it needs to take, but you have to keep taking action. Okay. So as a coach, that's the thing I'm always going to be kind of getting my clients to remember. You can listen to all the podcasts, read all the books, sit in all the therapy sessions, which is a form of taking action, but you need to take action with the food, which is why setting goals around how you're going to challenge yourself every single day is imperative to getting better. So yeah, be patient with yourself. It's going to take a while, but keep moving forward with taking action.
Love that. Okay. So if people want to work with you, they want to find you, how are they going to do that?
Yes. So they can find me on Instagram. I'm Meg_McCabe. My website is meg-mccabe.com. At the moment of recording, I have a temporary page up. So it's being refurbished. Hopefully you catch the pretty version of it when you're listening to this. but those are my two big places you can find me. And then, of course, through my podcast, which is the Full and Thriving podcast, which is an eating disorder recovery podcast. But we're also starting to branch out into more personal development type topics as well, and just like psychology, mental health. So if that sounds interesting to you and you don't really want to work with a coach right now, just go check out some free episodes over there. That's awesome. It's a good time.
Cool. Well, thank you for all the work you're doing. It's much, much needed. Appreciate you being here. I'm going to go listen to your podcast. So.
Yay. I love it. I'm going to listen to more of yours. And I'm, again, Christina, I am so grateful that you could have me on the show and that you invited me here today. I appreciate all the work that you do in the field and all the education you're providing and the support you're providing just by like having this show out in the world. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for saying that. And thank you for being here. We need like many more of you. So it takes all of us to hopefully make a shift and change, you know? Mm-hmm. So thank you.
You're welcome.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.